This is ensemble member Randall Arney, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theater Company podcast.
Hello, my name is Martha Levy. I'm the artistic director at Steppenwolf Theater, and I'm talking to William Peterson, Steppenwolf ensemble member, and the actor who is playing Ham in our production of Samuel Beckett's Endgame. Billy, hello.
Hi, Martha.
Yes. The play was directed by our friend and fellow ensemble member, Frank Galati, and features Jan Barford, also ensemble member, in the role of Clove, and another ensemble member, Fran Guinan, in the role of Nag. And I have the good fortune to play Nell in the production. So I just want to talk to you about the experience of being in this play, because, let's be honest, you have the central role. It's a huge role. And, you know, Billy, we know your work in a lot of different ways, but I think it's fair to say that the work that you've done before this, the narrative was a lot clearer. I mean, there were events, there were plots, the character was more, conforms to more realistic expectations around a person. This play often offers a kind of wide open charter in terms of its meanings and who that guy is. Did that change the way that you approach working on it?
I don't know. I think that, I had seen a couple different productions of Endgame over the years, different places. And I always, I mean, my appreciation for Beckett was always great, even when I was young, but I didn't make any attempt to think that I understood it necessarily. Mm-hmm. However, working with Frank and you guys on this, having the chance to perform it, I have come to understand the play in a much different way than I had ever understood it.
How so?
In watching it. Well, you know, what you were just saying about the different, the storytelling being different. Obviously, some of it feels abstract, absurdist. However, for me, playing Ham, there is, even though his mind works in so many different, you know, attitudes, it feels like a place that's real, and a time that's real, and the people he's dealing with are real, and the relationships feel established, even though they may, to an audience, seem a little bit absurd or unreal. The place, to me, feels very real. I mean, yes, it's a sort of nondescript basement of the world with parents in garbage cans. And Ham, my character, is blind and cannot rise out of his chair, which is also a completely different thing than I've ever had to deal with before. However, the longer we do the play, the more naturalistic it feels to me on some level. I mean, obviously, there's a certain style to doing it.
Yeah.
Naturalistic, not necessarily the first thing we think of, but it's become more and more naturalistic to me. It's, you know, and of course, as you know, with Frank being such a sort of, having studied Beckett for so many years and having done it himself several times, it was so wonderful to kind of liberate the play with him.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, Frank, Jan, you, Fran, I have all known each other for 25 years at least, right? Mm-hmm. And all of us now we met each other when we were young people. And now we're more looking at the issues of middle age. And I'm thinking about what you're saying about the play. It becomes less abstract, doesn't it?
As we get older.
Yeah.
We did, at my old theater, Remains Theater, 1,000 years ago, we did a production of Waiting for Godot. And we did it because we read it, we loved it. You know, we were young theater artists. Beckett was this sort of iconic writer. Mm-hmm. We were interested in doing experimental work, absurd work, whatever. And we did it, but we were ill-prepared. We could do the lines, we could do the blocking, we could, you know, we could get to the end of the story, but we didn't. It didn't move us, it didn't affect us, and consequently probably not the audience either. And I just felt, as we've talked about, that, you know, all of a sudden you get into your 40s and 50s, and the play has, his work has different significance.
Yes.
Because when you're 25 or 28 years old, you know, you know it's all... I mean, I remember seeing a production of Endgame with Rick Clucci that was actually somewhat shepherded by Sam Beckett himself, which was at the Goodman Studio Theater back in 1982, I think, and sitting there mesmerized as a young actor.
Yes.
At what they were doing on the stage with this language, with this play, and how different it was from the majority of plays that I'd seen, and being fascinated by it, but I didn't get it. Yes. I mean, I still don't get it all, but I feel it.
Yes.
In a much different way than I ever felt it before.
Because don't you find that one of the consequences of aging is that you live in a certain way less as a doer in the world? And there's much, I find the conversation that's going on in my head is much more central.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
Which is Ham's experience, right?
That's what he goes through. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, he doesn't have the ability to do much other than sit there and hope that his man, Clove, will take care of him and get him the things he wants and bring him information. And he expounds on his own creative flourishes. And it's interesting because, as you said, the idea that we start to do less. I remember as a young actor, I know that this is significantly harder, not just this play, but many plays that we do now as we reach middle age they take a different toll than they did when we were in our 20s.
And see, apropos of that, here's a question I have. In a sense, the Endgame is about a man in his... in his end game, he's reviewing his life. And you as the actor have to be in some way engaged with that process, which is a dying process.
Mm.
We always talk, you know, all of us actors who are sane, we realize that we're separate from the part and the activity. But I always call it being under the weather of a role.
Mm-hmm.
It does, it's in our head. What is that like to negotiate that?
Well, you know, I've always, oddly enough, I've always felt that, yes, this is his situation, but I see him fighting against it.
Yeah.
In much of the play.
Yes.
He's doing his best to live in his own creative way. There's an attempt to keep playing the game. I know Jan is a great chess player, and I am not, but he talks about the end game, and Beckett talked in one of his conversations that we read about that the end game, you know, an amateur player playing chess, when they reach the end game stage of the game, can keep moving his pawns or his king around the board and avoid capture. And but never finishing the game.
Yeah.
And a competent, skilled chess player will realize that ultimately he can't win this and tilt his guy over and say,
mm-hmm,
you win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Beckett was fascinated by the idea and frustrated by the idea of players that would continue to play in the end game. And I think that's what Ham is.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he is continuing to play, and yet periodically he goes, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Let's get this over. Why am I continuing to play?
Do you?
But he threatens. Clove asks him at one point to stop playing. Can we just stop playing? And he says, never.
Yeah.
I'll never stop playing.
Yeah. What is that? Yeah.
And in fact, I don't know that they ever do.
Right. You know, the audience, because as we were talking about, there's a way in which the play is really open to interpretation. And, you know, I think we find that the audience... This is true of any play. It elicits different responses on any given night from an audience. Do you feel that sway of response is bigger in this play?
Yes. I think it's more open, obviously. I mean, we're still learning about the play, having done it 50 times or whatever we've done. I think that the audience, you know, I kind of wish they could just, without having any sort of predestined thought about Beckett or having talked to anybody and said, oh, man, it's really weird or this or uh-huh. that, to come in and just absorb it personally. I'm sure that people absorb it different ways, which is what to me is great about the piece and about Beckett's work in general, is that, you know, you can have a personal response to it that would be very different from somebody sitting next to you.
You know, and I think if I may say so, I think in our production, one of the advantages that one has is Frank's direction of the production, the design. There's something so sort of exquisite mm-hmm. about it that it visually is a really pleasing experience, the lighting and so forth. And the play is not very long, so living in that kind of ambiguous state is bearable.
Yes,
you know?
But it's also, you know, it's a test. I mean, I can understand why audiences can become frustrated with it from time to time, because if you measure yourself against trying to get it
yes.
as it goes along, you can become frustrated because it's not something you get on an intellectual level.
Right.
It's something you may reason with long after you
yes.
leave the theater,
yes.
you know, and come back to. I don't think you'll ever forget. I never have forgotten any of the productions of Endgame I've seen, whether they were good or bad.
Right.
It's memorable in that way, and because of that, it has a tendency that to be able to play upon your subconscious as much as it does consciously. You know, if you let the conscious part of it just roll over and not worry about it,
yes,
then you can let your subconscious absorb it and have impact.
You know, and what you're describing is it's part of what Beckett is about, isn't it? That the paradox of things like that. You know what. One of the paradoxes that I think he's really exploring in this play is our need for other people and our inability to, well, accept that need in ourselves and genuinely open ourselves to other people. Do you want to speculate on that at all? I mean, it's integral to the relationship that Clove and Ham have. But there's even a part in the end where Ham talks about splitting himself into various voices, like a solitary child
mm-hmm.
in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? Why can't these people be kind to each other?
I don't know. Are we? You know? I obviously there's way too much. There's quite a bit of the story that has happened before the story begins.
Yes.
Before our story begins. You know, it's interesting to me. Sometimes when I'm out there doing this with Jan, it feels like one of those 25-year marriages where the kids have grown up and gone off, and you're left with each other, and you don't know what to do with your life, and you don't know everything that it was geared towards doing has either been completed or is incomplete. And
your disappointments reside in that other person.
In the person in the room
yeah.
with you that's
yeah.
been there for 25 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's somewhat available in the relationship he has with Nag and Nell in the garbage cans, you know. And some of that is brought out throughout the play, is that relationship and who they are and how much like the parent he is and how much despising the fact that he's like the parent he is,
yes.
you know. And Clove and Ham, servant, master, older brother, younger brother, lover, husband, wife. I mean, that is all in that relationship. And it's a conflict. But as he says, you know, you loved me once.
Yeah.
You don't love me anymore because I've done things to you that you
yes.
didn't make you happy.
And that was such a theme in the way that Frank talked about the play. I mean, first of all, to begin the first day of rehearsal and say, Endgame, it's a family comedy.
Yeah.
Because all of the relationships that you just listed off are in it.
Well, you know, the relationships in August Osage County, although of a completely different style, are the relationships on some level in Endgame.
Yes.
You know, I mean, yes, you have more characters in August. It's about Oklahoma. It's American. It's but the struggle and the, you know, although in a much bigger play that is August Osage County, you know, resides a lot of those moments and themes right here in this little Beckett jewel.
Yeah, you know what, Billy, just as you're saying that, I'm kind of in getting an image of, like, our struggle. We it's like we're just beating the walls of containment, and we project those out into our relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we also see that even when it is a person who's entirely in his head, you're still beating against the inside of your skull,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which may be just, you know, a fundamental fact of being a human being.
Yes, well, we at a certain point, and maybe not when we're 28, which goes back to what we're saying about acting when you're 28 and acting when you're 55, is that you don't think about death, but at a certain point in your life, it dawns on you that, you know, how do you live your life when you know you're going to die?
Yeah.
You know, what matters from this point on?
Yeah.
Do I... You know, what do I do? Do I do anything different? I'm good at this.
Mm-hmm.
But should this be it? Is this how I will go to the, you know, to the assisted living center?
Yeah.
As an old actor?
Yeah.
Or will I, and will I be afraid? Will I be brave or will I be afraid
mm-hmm.
as it shows up on my door?
Yeah.
How will I handle it, gracefully or, as many that I have known, ungracefully?
Mm-hmm.
And I think therein is our elements of this play, themes of this play that are profound to audience members of all stripes.
Right.
You know, and all ages. However, I do think it plays better to people who have had some experience with loss.
Yeah.
Which at some point is all of us.
Yep. Well, gosh, I really appreciate you talking about the play.
Martha, my pleasure. It's been a joy doing it with you.
I love it.
And I thank you very much for deciding to do this play for Steppenwolf. I mean, there's controversy to this, and it's brave of you to do it, and I can't thank you enough for how well you birthed it.
Thank you, Billy. And you know what? We're emboldened in the choice because we have a really great audience.
Yeah.
Smart people.
Yeah.
And if you want more information about the production, please go to www.steppenwolf.org and see you at the theater.
Cool.